Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Tech Connect Podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
Today on the show, it's another Dean and John special.
Yes, sir.
We're going to be talking about remote work.
Yes.
Which, obviously, popular topic right now.
Work from home.
I'm pretty sure when we started working from home, we didn't expect to keep working from home for as long as we did.
I didn't.
But here we are. We're going to talk about the challenges. We're going to talk about the benefits. We're going to talk about, you know, the future of work from home. Is this the future? Is it just an experiment or is this something that's going to go on? Probably is. And then we're also going to talk about a few tips that we have for working from home.
Yeah, we got to get serious about it, right?
I mean, we do.
Yeah. Work from home, it's here. Got to get serious about it.
As always, we will have our recurring segments, Value to the VAR, and What's Tech Connecting with Us. It's time for us to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect Podcast. It's time to get connected.
So, Dean, we are 5 months into working from home.
Five months.
It is mid-August as we are recording. We started work from home at Blue Star in mid-March.
Yeah, that's true.
So we've been at this for 5 months now. I have actually not been back into our regular office since that day that we left.
I know.
You are in there somewhat semi-regularly.
And I have sat at your cubicle.
There you go. Yeah, see? Well, hopefully you're keeping it clean and nice. And hopefully I didn't leave anything in there that's rotting or something.
No. You're all good.
Yeah, but me, I've been at home the whole time, other than when we come here to the studio. This is the only time that I
Real quick, it's kind of weird when I go into the office because it's literally like time stopped.
It is. It's frozen.
It's like everybody left, boom. And then you have pictures, you have people that they weren't expecting to be gone as long as they have. Yep. So it's, I don't know what movie it is, but it's like walking through the movie where like literally time stopped at everybody's cubicle.
I know. Bizarre. I have a calendar on my desk that's still probably on March. I had my Mr. Red snowman bobblehead, I think, out there. It was like the wintry theme. I like to rotate those out.
Okay.
Different times of the year. I probably would have rotated out by now. Yeah, it's got to be strange. But so personally, we've talked about remote working and what it's like working from home a few times on the podcast
in the context of other conversations. Sure.
I want us to dive a little further into that today, talk about what our experiences have been like, what's been challenging, and not necessarily just what's been challenging, you know, or good for us, but what we think and what we've understand about what's challenging and good, you know, across the industry for other people in different types of positions. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to get into maybe a little bit of prediction about what's next, if this is going to be an ongoing concern. And then we'll dive into some of our own little tips and tricks, I think, you know, of what we're going on here. So let's start with thinking about the challenges. And I know, like, again, this is something that could vary wildly depending on your situation. When we first started working from home, about a week, maybe two after we started is when daycare is closed. And I have a now almost three-year-old. At the time, he was 2.5. So he had to come home and start working. My wife started about a week after we started working from home at Blue Star. My wife also started working from home for a while. So that we were in a situation where, you know, all three of us are in the house together all day long for a while. I let her use like the traditional office space because she takes a lot more phone calls and has to be in meetings and more quiet than I do. Where I work from like the kitchen table, my son was pretty much playing in the living room, watching way too much television, but you do what you had to do. So obviously circumstances are very different. Now, my wife's back working in her office again, like, you know, is actually back on her job. My son's back in daycare, at least for now. Hopefully that's, you know, going to be the case. I feel relatively safe about that, but, you know, there's some concerns still there, obviously. You know, it was one of those things we tried to gauge, like, what's best for him versus for us, that kind of situation. And I'm working out of our traditional home office now, and I'm very much enjoying work from home because it suits me and my personality and my style of work.
Yep.
But I know it's not for everybody. Dean, tell me a little bit about your current situation, maybe where you were versus where you are now. And then maybe let's start getting to some of the challenges that we've encountered.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like everybody else, I think some of the notes that I made is, you know, one of the things that has changed for me and the whole work from home, and I'll be candid, I still go into the office maybe at least now a couple days a week. When it first hit, no, everybody was home and at lockdown. I'll say that my quality of life, and this is counterintuitive, went up. And it went up in the way that I have an 8-year-old daughter. I've talked about the fact that we were able to spend more time together.
Right.
And more time together, one of the reasons why my quality of life went up a little bit is because my commute went away.
Right.
So when you free up, Well, what for me is 45 minutes one way. That's an hour and a half every single day that I'm free to do something else now. Well, spend time with Tori or spend time with the other kids. That's what I was, and still to this day, enjoy a lot. So it has definitely helped me reframe, you know, portions of my life as it relates to that. And I definitely think that when you take a step back and say, well, are we going to go back to just working at home? I'm telling you, it's going to be really hard to convince a lot of people to commute like we had been, you know, it coming back to where we were. I just don't know that that's going to happen. Yeah. You know, so that might be one of those things that that kind of is a factor of where we're at now. So, you know, I've been embracing the kid time, if you will. I've been embracing the fact that I don't have to commute. However, there have been some downsides of working from home. And in fact, I was reading a study recently that said that most managers are actually putting in more hours and work from home than they would have if they had been in the office.
Right.
Makes a lot of sense to me. And, you know, because in our environment, and we're an environment where there's offices, yes, but there's a lot of cubicles. And actually, our department has north of 50 people in it. So it's a lot easier for work to get done in the sense that people could just pop into my office and ask a quick question, and we could resolve things literally in seconds, maybe minutes.
Right.
Whereas now, oh, wait a minute, I've got, you know, can I schedule a meeting with you? It's going to take a little bit longer. And so the hours at work, you know, even though I, you know, work, well, some can claim some insane hours anyway, but, you know, had been extended because of that factor. So those are a couple things. And that kind of feeds into the challenges, right?
It does.
That I think that we're facing.
You know, you mentioned like the managers overworking, but I'll be honest, like I found myself overworking to some extent.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's true.
And from what I've talked to people that are, you know, working from home, this has been a common issue. Mm-hmm. And I think there's two factors there. One, it's easier to do it when you don't have that commute on either end.
Yep.
You know, like, you know, when you're in an office and it's the end of the day and you know you've got a commute ahead of you and you want to get home or you've got something to get to, you tend to like, hey, I got to be out of the door at a certain time because I want to beat the traffic. I know there's going to be some problems. Maybe I got to get somewhere at a certain time versus if you're doing it at home, hey, I don't need to be as concerned about that. I don't have to worry about the commute. I don't have to be anywhere until 6:30. So now I can work till 6, whereas normally I would have worked till 5 so that I could get home by 6 and then get where I needed to go by 6:30, something like that.
Right.
And then on the flip side of that too, like I found myself working earlier a lot. Now, again, going back to the changes in my situation, when it was all three of us still at home, I found myself getting up pretty early in the morning. And I still am doing that. I'm getting up pretty much my normal time because my wife's getting up and getting ready for work because she actually has to go now. But I'm getting up with her and going and starting my normal time because I figure if nothing else, I get a, you know, anywhere from a half an hour to, you know, to a solid hour of time in before my son wakes up. And like before it was when he wakes up, then I had to get him up, get him started with his day, get him
the day going, right?
Get him situated with whatever
the
he was
routine.
Whatever he was going to entertain himself with for a couple hours or something, you know, before he needed something else. But I also admit that I felt extremely guilty at times because I had to put a lot of attention into him. Again, my wife was very busy and, you know, couldn't make as much time to come and hang out with him and do stuff for him as I could. It was a little easier for me to stop what I was doing and take a break and come over and assist him with something. So because I felt like I was doing that a lot, there were many days where I found myself working through my lunch break, just eating while I was working, you know, because I felt like, hey, I'm getting up in chunks of 5, 10, 15 minutes at a time to change diapers, grab food, change the channel.
Right.
Do something to keep him entertained for a few minutes.
Well, and to me, that's the difference about what we have experienced and what we have gone through, as opposed to just the headline work from home. Work from home is one thing.
Right.
When you have a support structure and something to do with the kids, it gets really gummy with those of us that have children. Work from home, if you don't have children, to me, and it isn't different, you know, if you're... Anyway, kids add that layer to what we've just experienced with this pandemic in two ways. In one that you're hitting on, absolutely. It's not just working from home, but it's working from home plus being the parent, plus being the teacher of your children too. It's like, it is literally three jobs at one time.
Exactly.
And very difficult to do. Compounded by the fact that when you're in a pandemic, you can't rely on the people that you normally would be able to rely on, which would be parents and friends or grandparents for a lot of people.
Right.
And friends, you don't do that. The whole idea behind a pandemic is you're in contact with as least amount of people as you possibly can.
Yep.
What a recipe for just mayhem at the house, right? I mean, you're trying to work from home. You can't rely on anybody because you don't want to get anybody sick or anything like that. It's just this compounding feature that of a pandemic that I think when we get out of the pandemic, you know, those portions come off the table.
Right.
And I think work from home gets a little bit more normal in the sense of work from home. Look, if I can work from home, as long as somebody's with Tori or Tori's, you know, at school, getting education, doing what she should be doing as an 8-year-old. I don't think me working from home is any different. If you had somebody for miles, you know, okay, you can function just as like you're sitting at your cubicle.
Yep.
Not a problem. It's
just,
it's that lumping on factor that I think is really skewed so much of what we've experienced in the last 5 years.
And that's very much where I'm at now. Like now that I'm,
Miles is
semi-normalized. He's back in daycare. Yep. You know, and again, this was, a difficult decision for us. This has been for, I'm sure, for a lot of parents of kids that age.
Oh,
and I do not envy folks like in your position that have school-age children figuring out, are they going to back to school? Are they not?
Right.
Should we let them? Should we not? You know,
mm-hmm.
And that's going to be an ongoing concern as well.
Yeah.
And that's going to complicate, obviously, you know, parental matters.
Yeah.
For me now, like I'm in a situation where, hey, he's going to daycare. So I basically am still doing somewhat similar thing. I'm starting early. When he wakes up, I get him ready. I take him to daycare, come back, keep working. But then at that point, I get a regular day's work in.
Yep.
Uninterrupted.
Yep.
You know, and this is where we can talk maybe a little about even some of the benefits too. Like there's less interruption than it would be a day at work in an office. You know, there's fewer people coming to my desk, fewer people, you know, asking me questions, fewer opportunities for someone to catch me in the hallway and chat about a TV show or a movie or something, you know. So I'm getting more work done. But I also now don't feel quite as guilty.
Mm-hmm.
So when my break time comes up, I actually do step away from my computer.
Yep.
I will go make myself something to eat, maybe watch a TV show or
something,
you know, or
do
some kind of chore around the house that I needed to get done. Mm-hmm. Last week, I was like, hey, I've got an hour. I have time to mow the lawn, you know, like do a quick lawn mowing. And, you know, took care of that on a lunch break. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of stuff where before, like I felt bad if I tried to do anything like that. Now I'm like, okay, I can take a more sensible break. And I do enjoy the fact that being at home means, again, I don't have to go drive somewhere to find some food and then, you know, or run out somewhere to do an errand that, you know, has to take me less than 20 minutes or so. Then I got to run back to the office so I can come back within an hour's time.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I get a nice full hour to actually go and do something.
Yeah.
But again, that's just the current situation. It could change again at any point.
Could.
You know, daycares could close again in another couple of weeks. You know,
could.
Obviously right now we're in a situation where we're seeing a lot of numbers ramping back up. There's a lot of closures starting to happen again. We could all be right back at doing this within the next few months.
Sure.
But hopefully some of what we've learned in the 5 months previous, we can apply to what we do next if this has to happen again.
Yeah. So I think, you know, and I was reading another article, some of the adaptability that we're all kind of going through is a modification of the normal work day shift, if you would. I mean, I think people's typical... if you were to say, what does a typical work day look like? Oh, it's well, if you're a banker, it's 9 to 5.
Right.
Nobody works like that. But anyway, 8 to 5, I think, or 8 to 6 or somewhere in there is what people would normally say is a work week. And I think that what has happened coming out of the pandemic is a shift of that.
Right.
And there are studies already that are showing that actually what they're showing is that not that people are logging on earlier. It's not that. It's a phenomenon what they're starting to call the night shift.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, you have workers that during the day, at least those that still have children at home and things like that, you know, they are multitasking and doing what they can to keep the home life is structured as well as the work life. But how that's manifesting itself is that they're working later into the evening and into the weekends for some folks.
I personally don't think that's a good thing.
No, I'm just saying that that's what some of the studies are showing is that, you know, if I'm doing 2 hours with my child, you know, but I still need to get in an 8-hour
again, that
work
guilt
day,
factor. Yeah.
A little bit of that guilt factor. Yeah. Well, I'm assuming that people are still working a 40-hour week.
Right.
I'll put that out there.
Right.
If you're going into this and saying, well, one of the benefits is I went from a 40-hour week to a 30-hour week. I'm not, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just assuming you're staying in a 40-hour week. And then, so that increases that time, and it creates that night shift. So people are maybe doing, you know, they're sitting down with their computer at night when they're watching TV, but they're firing off some emails, catching up. And so maybe it's 15 minutes, 20 minutes while they're doing that, but it's still their work. They're engaged, you know, they're still doing that. So I think that that's one of the changes that, and again, I agree with you. I think that that's one of the changes I hope doesn't continue in the sense that of the work from home. But I think that if people have structure with their, and again, I'm relating to those that have children, because I think if you don't have children, none of that really should be a factor.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You shouldn't have to stretch your day.
Right.
You know, it's those that have that.
And
I'm
very much hoping that people in management positions understand that as well and realize like, hey, if suddenly you have an employee who has started turning in extra work at night, you're getting emails from them in the evening or on the weekends, don't make this assumption that like that's who they are and they're excited to do that and they're ready to, you know, put in the time no matter when you want them to put in the time. Mm-hmm. Because it may simply be like, hey, they're trying to get their job done. They know they've got a job to do and they want to do it. But because of this very unique situation, they are forced to do it at times that maybe they normally wouldn't have before.
But I think that's going to be hard for a lot of people to do.
I think so.
I mean, you've got some mentalities out there that are really getting challenged right now of just the traditional, you should be at work, you should be in your desk, you should be working and doing. Right. And that is very hard to connect to this normal that we're in now.
Right.
And so a lot of people just, I would imagine there's a lot of owners, a lot of managers, senior managers probably, because back in the day, that's not how you did it. And so, you know, you're moving my cheese. This is something completely different here.
Well, and you know, we had a podcast about the multi-generational workplace.
Yeah, right.
Some episodes back. And that was a topic that came up, this idea that you've got a generation, you know, the boomers in particular, that were very structured and regimented when it came to how workday was accomplished. Mm-hmm. That you did. Like you showed up at a certain time, you put in your hours, you went to lunch at this time, you went home at this time.
Which is a manifestation from their parents. You know, exactly. It was just kind of continuation. But yeah,
and I think it's interesting because, and this has obviously accelerated that, but I think some of the newer generations have been much more comfortable with the idea of, look, you work when you can work, where you work and how you work and what works best for you. Mm-hmm. And maybe that isn't, you know, 8 to 5 or 9 to 6 every day or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe that is 6 to noon and then you come back at it and do your last few hours or whatever later in the day. You've got something in between that you got to take care of and you do it later in the day or something. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing when we talk a little bit maybe about what we expect out of the future. Ideally, hopefully there'll be more flexibility around that too and an understanding like, look, not everybody, now granted, yes, a banker, for instance, if your business is open a certain hours every day, you have to have people working there at that time. But, you know, like in my role, for instance, you know, where I'm doing writing, for instance, you know, I'm writing ebooks for content marketing. There doesn't have to be a certain time of day that I have to write.
No.
Now, granted, you know, I still try to maintain a certain amount, certain hours that I work because I have my home life and I like to spend time with
my family. But I've heard some writers are really good late at night.
Exactly.
You know, they get their best inspiration at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Right. If I get a brilliant idea at 9 o'clock, I'm like, oh, I know exactly the angle I want to take with this. I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to go ahead and do the writing. And maybe that means that like, okay, I spent 3 hours on that tonight. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe tomorrow I don't necessarily work, you know, like right out of the gate at 8 a.m. or something. Mm-hmm. You know, you let your boss know like, hey, I put in 3 hours tonight working on this. Tomorrow I'm going to start a little bit later. I got something to do in the morning or something. I don't know. But that's, again, looking long-term at what this could mean and not even necessarily about remote work, but just about the idea that, you know, work doesn't always have to be defined by a certain, you know, time schedule anymore.
I'm going to throw you a curveball there, sure. Mr. Martin. So, you know, because a lot of times in this topic has come up a couple times with us in some previous podcasts as well. And as you were talking, I'm thinking to myself, you know, we often talk about how the managers need to be cognizant of the change and how the company needs to be cognizant of the change. What about the worker? What about the work? Does the worker? I'm feeling like the worker needs to be at least cognizant of the fact that, hey, they still have an obligation.
That's true.
You know, to the company. They still have an obligation to do the types of things that need to get done. And the reason why I'm kind of shifting hats here, I am also fully acknowledge that human nature sometimes is the path of least resistance, right? And so when you're not under an environment where management can walk by and see what you're doing or something like that, the path of least resistance is to not maybe, I can do that project a little later. And we've talked about how already project length is much more difficult in this work from home environment. You know, the length of project completion is being extended. So that to me is saying, well, people are doing just that. They're taking the path of least resistance. Maybe they're not working quite as hard. So wait a minute, what do you think? Is some of it on the worker?
It very much is.
Right? If we're going to train the company, hey, this is the normal now, you have to understand it. Maybe there's some on the employee side too.
There is, and I think it comes down to hiring the right kind of people. Because
that's a good point. Yeah.
Because again, like, you know, like I said, I enjoy working from home. I like the freedom that it affords me. I like to know that, like, hey, if today I have to go to a doctor's appointment at 10 o'clock, it's not a big deal that I go to my doctor's appointment, come back, and maybe I started my day an hour earlier than I would have to compensate or ended an hour later to compensate, and no one cares. Yep. I'm getting my work done. But that's the key there, is the person that still feels the obligation and still feels the desire, you know, to put in the work and recognize, like, hey, I took this time, I still have to put in the work somewhere.
Yep.
And, you know, that just comes down to your company culture for one thing. Yep. It comes down to the type of people you hire.
Management that we just talked about.
It comes down to management style. Yes. Yeah. To the work ethic. You know, there's a lot of factors that bleed into that.
Yep.
And that kind of brings up an interesting topic to me, which is, you know, I feel like there's probably a lot of managers, and we talked about this. We just had a podcast we recorded about managers, and we talked about the idea that a lot of managers that are the very regimented, authoritarian, like, my way, the only way, this is my structure for it, and I want to micromanage the hell out of everything, are probably struggling like hell right now. And they're the ones that are going to have the hardest time with dealing with this particular situation that we're in.
Yep.
So, you know, I feel like those are the ones where there's going to be some conflict, there's going to be some problem, and they're going to have to spend a lot of time adjusting to the new reality of this, especially if this does become a new normal.
But even to your point, I mean, I'm thinking, I mean, we all have to kind of shift our mentality and adjust for this. It's just, it's a world that some companies did a lot of work from home prior to this, and they were right in the groove, and this is no problem. I mean, the Googles of the world or whoever. That had a pretty strong work from home policy beforehand. Yeah. Our company wasn't, you know, definitely was not in that mode. I mean, we were still of the thought, you know, it's better to have the employee at our corporate office.
Right.
You know, this was part of our hiring practice. You know, yes, we might have a remote candidate who's strong, great. They'd have to be really strong in order to be remote. I think that mentality has shifted now. You know, now it's not so much they have to be here, because we've proven that we can still execute, and people are, it's okay if they're not in the office and working from home. So some changes there. I know we're kind of all over the board here.
No, I think this is good, actually, because I like that we're just kind of, to me, this was a very nebulous concept. There's a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought of something else too when we were talking about the management perspective of it, that there are some managers that I know were very hesitant about the idea, like, well, if I'm letting you work from home, how do I know you're not all just screwing around all day long, kicking back, watching TV, you know, checking your computer every once in a while, moving the mouse to make it look like you're still there.
Well, first off, Marco's got a program, apparently, that makes your mouse move every now and then.
Our producer, Marco, has mentioned that he's on top of that. He's figured out how to game the system. So.
But for all the Marcos out there that are gaming the system, no, I'm just kidding.
But, you know, but there's, you know, there's another simple question or point that comes out of that, which is, if you have employees that are doing that, that are going to game the system or are going to screw around and not do the work, guess what? Those people are doing the exact same thing in the office. Yep. It may not be as obvious.
Yep.
They can't wander away and watch TV for a couple hours, or, you know, go, you know, out driving around or something or whatever, or talk to somebody on the phone. Like, maybe it's not as obvious, but I guarantee you those people aren't putting in a solid 8 hours of work in your office, even under your watchful eye either. Yep.
Sure.
Those are people that, again, referencing back to our, you know, management podcast, you either got to figure out how to improve their work or get them out of your way, because they're not productive employees. If they can't do it in your office, if they can't do it at home, they can't do it in your office either.
Yeah. So let's talk real quick. And then another thing I wrote down is when we talk about challenges in the work from home environment, you and I were both in sales. I'm going to go back there. I think about the poor sales rep, poor sales rep who made a living doing quote unquote customer visits.
Right.
I mean, my Lord, I cut my teeth on driving around in my car, dropping off, going to this office, and hey, how are your copiers doing? Do you need anything? Yeah. Oh, you need some toner? I think I can sell you some of that.
Right.
what does that person do in this world?
I don't know.
Nobody's in the office anymore. So the poor sales rep, well, I see a lot of them on the golf course. I guess that's what they're doing. but anyway, I mean, how is this new work from home or smaller work environments going to affect people that, you know, that really build their livelihood on relationships and being right. able to have that customer contact. I think one of the challenges that this is posing and what work from home poses would be in the sales process, if I could get serious. I mean, you know, if you had a company that was very much that, you're going to have to pivot. You're going to have to figure out a different way to keep your sales reps engaged and keep your sales reps engaged with your customers.
Yep.
And we've talked about some of the ideas with Cordy.
I was just going to reference that. Digital marketing in a crisis, our very first podcast.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. That's why we put it up really high.
Yep.
Because there's some tactics that you can do to stay engaged on that front and adjust your whole workflow relative to where we are on the work from home. But anyway, I didn't mean to sidebar there. I completely agree.
I seriously have been sitting here thinking like, man, we have already covered in another podcast a lot of the stuff that the tricks and tactics that can help out with salespeople that are maybe struggling right now. Mm-hmm. We did a podcast on effective sales presentation. I promise this isn't all just promotion for our podcast here, but there's a reason why we've been hitting on a lot of these topics because they're super relevant right now.
Yep.
And in my mind, you know, if you are in sales and you're struggling because you can't get out there in front of people right now and, you know, persuade them with your charm or your in-person, you know, dynamic or whatever, that's different from what you can do over a phone or over emails. You're going to have to figure out a way to shift, and maybe creating some super smart, effective presentations is going to be part of that. Figuring out how you can, you know, get someone's attention. Like, hey, I know we can't meet face to face. I can't put this product in your hand right now. Mm-hmm. I can't demonstrate our service to you personally, but I still feel it's valuable. It's still something you're going to need. It's still something I want to get to you. Let's sit down and have a conversation. I've put together a nice presentation for you to show you, you know, exactly what we can do, what I understand about your business, what you need to know about mine, how I think we're going to fit together, what we can do in the future.
Yeah. And if you're a business owner who thinks that your sales process doesn't need to change, you know, or coming up in the future, once we get this vaccine in place, we can go back to just the good old way we were doing things. I'm telling you right now, dude, you're wrong. You're wrong. You have to enable your sales team in a different way from the work from home environment.
Period. And because in the end, there are going to be plenty of businesses that decide, you know what, I kind of am okay with the way things are right now. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with no longer having salespeople walking into my office on a regular basis and trying to pitch me things.
What? Yeah.
This has been working out just fine. Why don't we keep doing that? And if you're the company that says, well, no, I want to go back to the coming to your office every day thing, and they decide, no, that's not what we're doing anymore. We're doing it not just for safety reasons or disease reasons, but we're doing it because it's led to more productive days for us. I don't have to put someone's time aside to meet with, you know, all these reps coming in trying to sell us stuff all the time. Now we've developed a nice process where people can pitch to us at certain times. They present to us in a certain way. We, you know, do RFQs in a certain way or something, you know, like if that's the case, they're probably going to stick with that.
Mm-hmm.
If it worked and they operated under fairly normal circumstances along the way, what's the incentive for them to change? What's the incentive for them to go back to letting you do exactly what you did before?
Right. Yeah, 100%. And I know this was a topic you were going to get into. What are some of the benefits then? You know, when you think about it from the company perspective, what is the work from home benefit that are extrapolated out of some of those things?
Yeah, I think, you know, some of the topics I wrote down. One, obviously, you know, you're addressing the safety and health of your employees. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest one right now. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're able to let your employees work from home right now, why aren't you?
Yeah.
That's the bottom line question to me. Yeah. Like, you know, again, regardless of your personal feelings about the pandemic, whether you think it's a big serious issue, whether you don't think it's a serious issue, putting all of that aside, you know, if you have the opportunity to do it and your employees, you know, you have employees that are concerned about it, why not do it? Might as well let them work from home.
Well, unless you're the one of those, the thing is a Chinese hoax and they're a hoax from China. And then, you know,
I guess, but that's one of those situations where you go back to being a manager where you believe that whatever you think is what your employees are supposed to think too. Mm-hmm. And you have to realize like, hey, my employees aren't going to feel it. If you remember the very early days of all this, I mean, I remember sitting around the office and sitting with some people that were in a clear panic. I was always kind of like, well, I'm just watching the science. I'm paying attention to this. I started feeling the elevation of like, this is starting to become a concern. Sure. And it did reach the point where I was like, I'm ready to go work from home because I don't necessarily feel safe in the office every day anymore. But there was people that like 2 months before that were already freaking out before it had even reached the U.S. shores yet.
Right.
And I'm not saying they were wrong, but, you know, like mm-hmm. there's all these different levels of people that, that felt a certain way. Mm-hmm. And eventually, once we reached the point of, hey, let's go start working from home, that was the one thing we could do that everybody was relatively satisfied with. Mm-hmm. That everybody mm-hmm. could say, okay, we can all do this, mm-hmm. whether you thought it was a thing or not. Hey, I can still go work from home. It's not mm-hmm. a big deal. Or if you were very concerned about it, I can go work from home. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first big benefit, obviously.
Yeah. But, and that one's going to sunset at some point in time.
It will.
God willing, exactly. At some point in time, that sunsets and doesn't become a factor.
So then let's talk about some of the other benefits mm-hmm. that are could still be out there, even if, you know, the safety and health concern is no longer there. Mm-hmm. Think about the money businesses are saving.
Yep.
I can't imagine that there are not plenty of businesses that are looking at their electric bills, water bills, just the expenses of running a building and an operation mm-hmm. that when they have few or no employees in that building anymore, how much money they're saving.
And if they're not realizing it today, because let's face it, I mean, you know, they were in the office that they had, like us. You know, we have an office space that's built for 100 people on the floor that we're in. And if the normal moving forward is going to be 50% of those people are in the office at any given time, or 30% of them are, okay, we don't need that kind of office space anymore. So I'm thinking that maybe a lot of businesses kind of have what they have today, mm-hmm. but when they make the next move, it's going to be that. It's going to be lowering the cost, because I don't need to have room for 20 employees sitting in this space.
Right.
I need flex space for 8 people to come in and out and stuff like that. So my office, and again, as we've said, I would not want to be a commercial real estate agent right now because I think that they're going to be hurting for the next few years. Or at least any new construction on that front. But yeah, and then they'll start seeing the cost savings of the lower utilities, lower whatever, you know, around the traditional cost, if you will.
Yeah, that overhead has to get
overhead. Lower. Thank you. Yeah.
So we've talked about the flexible work aspect, and mm-hmm. I think this is something that it's a benefit to everybody in a sense that, hey, if you reach that point where you can be flexible with your work, where you can work with a manager who tells you like, hey, as long as you're putting in your hours every week and you're getting the job done, I don't care if it's, you know, mm-hmm. starting at 5 a.m. or starting at 9 a.m. You know, it doesn't matter to me as long as the work's getting done. Mm-hmm. And maybe this will open up that flexible schedule more, where we won't be so regimented, where in industries where it's not required that you be available and there between hours of 8 and 6, or maybe it's a little more acceptable to be like, hey, if your job can be done and you can get what needs to be done, you know, 5 to 3 or something, you know, that's fine. We'll do that, whatever kind of works. So there might be some flexibility that comes out of that. And I think that's what some people have been feeling right now, is like, hey, I'm working with my manager. They know I've got, you know, kids at home to deal with. I've got this learning stuff to do. Like it's I can't do my normal hours that I would normally do before. And they've let me be flexible about that. It's a great benefit. Mm-hmm. Obviously the commutes, big benefit.
Yeah.
I'm sure you saw it at some point. There was some studies that came out just showing like the decline in pollution mm-hmm. around people not commuting as much. Now, it wasn't as much of an impact as people wanted it to be mm-hmm. or thought it might be. Mm-hmm. Like it's one of those things that still stabilizes itself back out at some point. But mm-hmm. in the overall scheme of environmental, you know, concerns or whatever, you know, not having millions of people out on the road every single solitary day is potentially going to be a good thing.
There was a good solid month that was happening.
It was. Yeah, exactly. It was fascinating too. It was so weird. Like you out and driving and just like, it felt like we're just like, it was some apocalyptic, you know, movie or something. Where
well,
the
when
last
the cost of
the
oil
road,
goes
you know?
Negative on a barrel, something, you know, then there's a glut in the industry and because of supply so high.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was weird times there.
Yeah, it very much was. Obviously, you've got less distraction, potentially working at home. You mm-hmm. know, ideally you do. There's the comfort aspect. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, I like the comfort of being able mm-hmm. to just kind of roll out of bed, you know, mm-hmm. throw some clothes on, go get to work. You know, I know we've talked about it a little bit, and we'll get into some of like when we get maybe in some of the tips. You know, I've heard a lot of people talk about like, hey, dress just like you would going to work. Mm. And I think a lot of us may have tried that and then probably fell off the wagon a little bit. I'm not saying like, you know, you don't have to like necessarily go sit in front of your computer with your hair all over the place and wearing your pajamas and
full beard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, literally of not even remotely taking care of yourself, because it's just good to take care of yourself anyway.
Well, I think that's the advice that was being followed.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, you can be casual, but you still got to be human.
Right. But you know, hey, maybe you don't put on a suit and tie every day to sit in front of a computer, especially if you're never on a video conference or something. Right. It's not going to be that big of a deal.
Right.
You know, I know, again, that's something that some people might grate at a little bit, but the comfort aspect is it's okay to be comfortable, just maybe not, you know, lounging in bed, you know, typing at your computer from time to time, you know, while you're watching soap operas. That might be going a little bit too far, but, you know, it is ideally, it's your home and you've obviously created, hopefully created a space for yourself for that. The technology aspect, I think that's the other big benefit here. We've all had to learn in a hurry how to use a lot of different new technology, a lot of conferencing tools. I mean, how many different types of conferencing tools have you used over the last 5 months? What we've tried to use internally, what some of our partners may have been using. You know, every now and then somebody would invite me to a conference that's on some new conferencing tool. I'm like, I've literally never heard of this one yet, but sure, why not? I'll give it a try here. You know, IoT is an important part of what we're doing here. And it's also a different conversation about the future of work from home too, which is ensuring that everybody has access to quality internet, has access to the technology they need to work from home. You know, we again are in a good situation where, you know, we all have laptops. We could all take them home easily and work from there. Ideally, most of us had good internet. I know some of us may not necessarily, it may not be our, because it's not the environment we typically work in. But again, I think there's going to be a strong push, I believe, in the future, and it's happening now, and it's going to continue in the future for having quality technology for people to be able to work out of their homes.
Agreed. And those technologies have to really kind of iron out any issues that they may have had. For example, our phone system. You know, when thank you to our IT department, because they were under the gun there for for a little while. But imagining transferring, you know, hundreds of phone lines now to remote, and relying on software packages to do that, which is all well and good if the software package is perfect and works, but that never happens. So, you know, there's always hiccups along the way. And I think that, I mean, to your point, just kind of refining and or ironing out and all of those technologies that maybe if you work from home, you already kind of knew this stuff and were preaching to the choir. But for those of us that were thrown into that environment, we did. We had to learn a lot about those technologies, a lot about the connecting of devices and how that's done, and making it as smooth as possible.
Exactly. And I mean, imagine this happening 25 years ago.
Oh my, couldn't happen.
Mid-90s.
Couldn't happen.
A lot of us didn't have internet.
No.
Or very few of us did. Yeah. We certainly couldn't have afforded it probably, but you know, like, laptops weren't even really a thing, you know, like, you know, we were using desktops at best. Again, if you even had that technology, you were using a desktop at best. Most of us probably had a home phone line, but you know, we may not have had transfer technology to transfer from an office phone to our home phone.
So fascinating.
Even just 25 years ago, this would have been an entirely different situation. And to be honest, like, it's one of those things that kind of, it makes you think, like, would this pandemic be even worse at that time?
Oh, 100%.
There would have been so many fewer businesses that were even willing to close. Because either they would have had to literally close because they simply couldn't have operated, or they would have had to said, look, you guys have to stay working here because we need work done. Mm-hmm. There's no way for you to do it at home. Mm-hmm. You have to be here to do it.
Gotta be here,
And you know, and they would have 100%.
And I know we're going to get into this, but it's for those, we're dialoguing about the privileged who can work from home.
Exactly.
So when you think about it 25 years ago, there's certain parts of the economy that would not have been impacted any differently.
Right.
If you're in construction 25 years ago and in construction today, you're still going to work.
Right.
You're still clocking in. You still got your lunch pail. If you're in manufacturing, unfortunately, same thing. We've seen the stories about the folks on poultry lines and meat processing.
Yep.
And they work in environments that people are elbow to elbow. That hasn't changed. So we're really primarily talking about office workers at the end of the road. And those folks, this would have been dramatically different 25 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just dramatically.
Even 10 years ago would have been somewhat different as well. Like, there's technology that we're at now that still wouldn't have been even quite as accessible or easy to use. Then.
Yeah.
I don't think conferencing technology would have been as good as it is.
I absolutely think our economy would have taken a much, much the world economy would have taken a much greater hit had this happened. Definitely. 20 years ago.
I mean, even thinking about internet and Wi-Fi, like most of us now have pretty high quality Wi-Fi, mm-hmm. in large part because streaming services have become so popular, because we have smart devices.
Yep.
And there's, you know, we are relying on the internet and relying on fast internet so much more than we did before. The kind of fast internet that once upon a time was reserved for businesses
right.
yeah, is yeah, now yeah. commonplace in our homes. And even that is not necessarily always fast enough either.
I know.
Like you've got to be at a certain level just to even manage just the yes. just the regular work, or to be yep. able to, you know, to be yep. able to stream, to be able to do, you know, quality video conferencing. Like even that, there's still a disparity there. And again, when we get kind of into the future, and I guess we can kind of start pivoting a little bit to yeah. talking about the future. Like I'm a big proponent of the idea that, like, I think we've reached a point in society, and if nothing has pushed us any further than that, is this current situation where internet should be a utility. Mm. I'm a firm believer in that at this mm-hmm. point. You know, phones have been a utility for how long now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, electric, water, all of that stuff that is essential to life. Have we reached a point where internet kind of qualifies for that too? And I know, like, most people think of, like, well, it's just a thing you use to surf the web and watch YouTube videos and Netflix or whatever. But is it, like, now we suddenly hit a point where we asked a significant chunk of our workforce to go home and start working.
Mm.
And if they didn't, and also a significant portion of students to go home and start schooling.
Yep.
And if they don't have access to high quality internet,
right.
you know, that's accessible and affordable.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's where the pinch is happening.
There's a lot of problem that happens there. And that's one of those things, because I've heard whispers about it over the years. And I'm very much a believer that if anything is going to push us over that technological edge, this is the point where maybe someone says, you know what, maybe internet does need to be an actual utility of some sort.
Now, that's interesting. It's who knows? I mean, utilities is an interesting word. And I don't know if you mean utility is then it should be not just available to everybody, but made at no cost to anybody who needs it?
Not even necessarily
that. Or is
it
just a utility in the sense that
affordable.
It's affordable?
Okay. At least. I mean, you know, like, we all have to pay for electricity right. for the most part, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, but we're also not at the mercy of a bunch of companies that are telling us, hey, if you want the best electricity, if you want the electricity that's going to keep all your, like, where you can flip all your lights on at once and they all stay on, yeah. you got to power up to the, you know,
it's regulated.
5 million megawatts yep. a month plan or sure. something like that.
Sure.
There's regulation, right? Like everybody yeah. who has access to electricity mm-hmm. can do the same thing with electricity. And mm-hmm. that's not where we are with the internet right now. With the internet, you've got companies that can say, hey, I can give you access to the internet, but only a limited amount where you can maybe stream something and mm-hmm. maybe be on a computer in the mm-hmm. other room mm-hmm. at this price.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but you, if you want to have it in all of your rooms, everybody can be on at once, everybody can be streaming, you're only allowed to, you know, you gotta pay this price and go to this plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things, like I may be talking out of my ass here. Like there may be people that have like that look at this and go, this is a lot more complex than you think it is. But at the same time, there's a lot of people that I just don't feel like have the access that they should have.
Oh, that's abundantly clear. When you think about school children that are not of the ability to be able to afford to have any right. kind of connection
right.
At home. You know, I think the good news there is that eventually we'll get there. Technology will get there, and or there might be programs put in place. I mean, look, you can read the stories where there are these ultra light airplanes that can go up and mm-hmm. you know, like 20 miles up and provide internet yep. access to a wide swath, you know, I'm talking hundreds of miles at a time,
yep.
and they can stay up there indefinitely, yep. really, basically, or balloons. You know, I know right. Amazon was looking into that, and Google, and some of these folks. So it will definitely happen. It's not there now, but I do think it'll become a utility in the sense that it'll just be ubiquitous. Now, companies will still figure out a way to extract additional dollars, but potentially.
Well, yeah,
although, of course, electricity is one of those unique things, as you talked about.
I mean, more you use, the more you spend.
Well, right.
But no one's telling you, like, hey,
well, here's better power.
Right, exactly.
You know, this power is cleaner, so.
Like, you do have, competition, and I think that's still important. You have to have competition or else right. somebody drives at the price.
Yeah.
Although there's not, maybe that's, again, another issue. There's not always as much competition as maybe there should be.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, if you're setting up a way where you're saying, hey, if you're a household that just has a smartphone and a computer and you use X amount of internet, you only have to pay this much for it because we're just charging you by the gig or something, the gig of data that you're using. Versus maybe if you're a home that has, you know, five smart TVs, you know, 20 devices.
A couple teenagers like I do are, you know, they're on their phone, they're watching, gaming, they're streaming.
Then maybe then, hey, you're getting charged a little bit more because, you know, you're using a lot more gigs for that. But again, in my mind, it should be something like no one should be wanting for the internet. The same way that no one really, not that there isn't still places in the country where people do want for potentially electricity or for water, at least clean water, you know, there's still issues around that. There's all kinds of inequities and issues around that. But the attempt and the effort is that no one should be able to go without. And I just think we've reached that point where we should say the same thing about the internet.
This pandemic
has kind of proved
that's
that.
Another topic.
It is.
Is it a utility that you have at home? Because I guess you can go to the library and get on the internet, but that's not.
But that's a whole different thing. Hey, I'm here at the library today to do my job. You know, I'm going to work 8 hours here today. I need to be left alone. I got a conference call at 1:00. I need you guys to keep it quiet at that time. Not to mention they weren't open anyway.
So what do you think about that privilege, though? You know, this work from home is kind of It's the office workers that have been, that's primarily what we're talking about here.
Exactly, and this is where I will, you know, there's no great way to, you know, there's no solving this. Like there are always going to be jobs, and there are always going to be workplaces and industries that simply can't have the luxury of working from home and changing whenever something like this happens. Mm-hmm. You were just talking about some of them, manufacturing, production, somebody still has to be there to put stuff in a bag or a box, you know, to make sure the products that we're all, ordering up on Amazon or whatever are getting made. That still has to happen. And I think, a lot has been exposed about our economy and how it works. You know, I've heard a lot of people talk about, hey, if we're calling someone an essential worker because they have to show up on the job every single day, regardless of whether their health might be impacted or they might be putting themselves at risk. Mm-hmm. And yet those are typically the people we're paying the least right now, you know, and not to get into the, you know, the whole political side of that or whatever, but it does make you think about it. You know, again, like we are in a great situation where we work a nice office job. We were able to make that shift, get work from home. We had homes that had space for us to do it. We had quality internet, the ability to actually go home and do that. Like we were in a great place, but I know there's a lot of people that don't have that. And, you know, and I think it's, you know, this is just one of those, I think it's important for us to think about, man, how good we have it versus some other folks that don't. And ideally a lot of our listeners are probably in a similar situation to us where, you know, maybe they like to get out and about, you know, especially our VARs. I'm sure a lot of them like a lot of face-to-face and getting in front of your customers, but they probably were able to make this transition and still, to some extent, do their job without a lot of, you know, a lot of disruption and potentially losing their jobs at all.
Yeah, you know, you say that essential workers. I mean, that is a phrase that nobody even thought about five months ago.
Do you think a grocery clerk thought they were an essential worker?
No, absolutely not. I mean, that is one of those earthquake seismic shifts that in people's thought process that has come about as because of this pandemic. No, a cashier at a local grocery store never considered themselves to be an essential worker. Never would I have considered them to be an essential worker. And so,
and why didn't we?
Just our society. Well, because our society wasn't prepared for a pandemic and what it could do. I mean, the food supply at the end of the road is the most important thing to have up and running, right?
Yep.
And if you're not involved in that supply chain, then you're not essential. Yep. You know, well, pharmaceuticals and
healthcare,
I guess healthcare would be the other one. Yeah, yeah. Government, law enforcement, well, you know.
There are a lot of them out there, obviously.
But the food chain, the supply chain for food is pretty pretty significant as far as essential workers.
You take away people's ability to get food, and that's when society starts breaking down, let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah, you got all kinds of issues there. You know, one of the things I was reading in an article from, you know, on the CEOs said, well, what is one of the things, it was like the Fortune 500, I think, and just a survey from those CEOs, what are some of the things that changed about, you know, this whole pandemic? And that phrase, essential business, you know, I now have clearly understand what an essential business is.
Right.
And those that will be allowed to continue to function.
Yep.
But, you know.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've kind of covered a lot of what we wanted to talk about around yep. remote work. I know we've hit on a lot of the topics I've had.
I'm going to throw one more at you, though, sure. before we wrap it up and get into our recurring segments. How about this one that I was reading about is that one of the societal changes that may come from work from home and, you know, the ability. So we've discussed, companies are more comfortable with it now. Mm. We as a society have kind of proven the fact that we can work from home and still get the work done. That we would normally have done had we been in the office. I was reading about how not only is this going to expedite or create a flight from cities, right? Because who yes. wants to be in a city with millions of people, you know, during a pandemic? Yeah. That's exactly not where you want to
right.
be. So it's not only is it a flight from cities, but it's also a flight from the suburbs in the sense that you can work from anywhere, as yeah. we've all known, you know,
yep.
I can remember 10, 15 years ago, I can work from the beach, you know, because, yeah, right. But, you know, you really can.
Right.
You know, now that's not a pipe dream. You could work. You could live in UP in Michigan. People are moving to Utah,
yep.
you know, where there's not a lot out there, but they're still getting stuff done and working from home from really kind of far out.
Yeah, I completely agree. It is going to be a huge shift. And this is something actually I did think about touching on and didn't get to is the idea that I think employers are going to have to start thinking about that more. And yeah. For one, I think there's two things that are going to happen. One, I think you're going to see a lot of employers that are going to start becoming more comfortable with hiring remote employees. Mm-hmm. We talked about that.
Yep.
And I also think, though, is that the employers that don't want to, that still want to insist upon, hey, everybody's got to be in this office at this time at their desk, are going to find themselves having a harder time recruiting.
Yeah.
Because if more and more employers start offering work from home as a regular part mm-hmm. of their business, mm-hmm. the companies that don't want to or refuse to, I think are going to have a harder time retaining employees because yep. people are going to say, look, I like this work from home thing. It's working very nicely for me. I can still do my job. I don't have to mess with my commute. I mean, think about, we live in the greater Cincinnati area. Mm-hmm. Do you live in Northern Kentucky as well?
No.
Okay. Yeah. So I live in Northern Kentucky, which the idea of commuting into Cincinnati is awful. I have avoided my entire life yeah. finding
like
jobs.
It's like one road to Cincinnati, right?
Exactly. And it's not far. We're not talking about a massive distance. Like, we're only talking about
it,
you know.
No, that's just it. It's 5 miles, but it takes you an
exactly.
hour to go 5 miles.
It can
miles.
Take you forever. And I'm sure anybody who lives anywhere close to a big city and has to commute into yeah. or out
right.
of that city.
They're empathizing.
They understand this. Yeah. So, you know, I intentionally not looked for jobs in the city of Cincinnati because I didn't want to have to deal with the commute part. It was one of those mm-hmm. things like, hey, if the perfect opportunity came along, I would do it. Mm-hmm. But I made a point at it. And my job before I came here to Blue Star was much further away. But it was one of those things where like I could take the loop
yep.
that runs around the
right,
city.
Right.
And it was still a long commute, but at least it was a moving commute. Mm-hmm. It was the kind of commute you didn't mind doing. Mm-hmm. Well, that should be something that changes. Like, that should be something where it doesn't matter if, you know, either one, the commutes obviously hopefully get, you know, not as bad because not as many people will be traveling, mm-hmm. but also that why does it matter? Like, I, you know, yes, I'm only 5 miles away from you, but I can do my entire job from the comfort of my home and never have to commute. And maybe I start working half an hour earlier and half an hour later that day. Mm-hmm. Again, all these benefits we've
yeah,
talked about.
Right, right.
And I think there's going to be a pretty seismic shift that happens with employers because of that. And I think employers that refuse to do it, you know, that don't have any good reason to refuse to and just won't get on board are going to find themselves missing out on quality applicants because of that.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And I think that what that means is that those companies are going to lose innovation. They're going to lose because at the end of the road, then what you're going to have are people that are a bunch of yes men, you know, who are just, you know, easy to manage, I guess would be the mm-hmm. word, but really have under your thumb. And that's not, you know, that's just not going to be a work environment that's going to be a long lasting one, or at least an innovative one. So
definitely.
Yep.
Well, listen, this has been a great conversation.
I think we cured some of the world's problems.
We have. We've cured the problems. Everybody's going to remote work from here on out. The end.
Yeah.
And internet's going to be a utility. So we've done it all. If you have any additional thoughts, questions, concerns, feel free to reach out to us. You can find us on Twitter at TechConnectPod. You can email us techconnect@bluestarinc.com. We are going to shift over to our recurring segments, though. All right, the first of our recurring segments is value to the VARs. Mm-hmm. This is where we kind of wrap up our conversation and talk about, you know, some things related to our VAR audience in particular and what we've discussed. Today, I just wanted to make it a simple, like, are there any tips and tricks about working from home that we haven't discussed? Anything that you would recommend to anybody who isn't currently in a work from home situation, is considering it, or is looking at this long term, as we may very well be?
Yeah. Well, I think as an individual, the tip or trick I would give there is kind of hearkening back to some of the things that we were talking about, is that, you know, you're complicit in this whole thing as well. It's not just the company's responsibility to give you the right tool sets to work from home and things like that. You have to be cognizant of the fact that you are a participant in that, and know that it manifests itself in various ways and way you get your work done. Collaboration is harder to do when you work from home. So be cognizant of that and be aware of that. Mm-hmm. Communicate more with folks. Projects are going to take longer. Don't be the one who's bogging things down, making sure that you're engaged in the process and feel like you're getting your work done. And if you do shift jobs, you know, understand that, you know, the training aspect of it is going to be a little bit difficult in this work from home environment. So again, the workers have got some part in this marriage, you know, and this new work from home norm that we have, as well as the companies.
Yeah, very much so. I think the only couple I have that we haven't already talked about, one, and this is, again, some of these tips that you hear about a lot, separating your work from your home space, if possible.
Yeah.
And again, I know this is one of those potential privilege things where maybe it's not as easy for you to have a separate workspace and a home space. You know, I've got a nice little, we have kind of like a foyer at the front of our house that can operate as an office. So, you know, that's my place for work. And when I'm done, I walk out of there. I will not go back to it until I start working the next day. It's not the same place.
Even if you have a 300-square-foot flat, I think you can still, you know, mark out a little bit of space, put a sheet up around it or something like that to define this space. I totally agree with that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If possible, make some time for breaks. You know, I think, again, that sometimes that's something that can be a little bit difficult working from home. Like, I feel like when you're in the office, you're a little more inclined to, like, man, it's time for me to get up and get away from my desk.
Absolutely.
Either to go chat with a coworker or go down to the break room and grab some coffee, go out for your lunch break. Again, at home, where things are maybe a little bit more convenient to get to, it's easy to just run to the kitchen, grab a coffee, and come right back. It's okay to make some time for breaks. It's okay. You know, if at work, you normally would have taken a 10-minute break to go grab some coffee and chat with a coworker. Do something similar at home. Figure out a way to do that. If it's maybe calling somebody, it's okay to step away from time to time and stare out the window for a few minutes or something, because you need the mental break. Exactly. You need those breaks. And even when your home and work are technically the same place.
Same thing. Even more of a need to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can't, you need the break. You need the mental break.
Exactly. Don't ignore your health.
Mm-hmm.
Your family or your family's health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, that's another struggle I heard from people that, you know, working from home is like, we're all here together and I'm desperate to, you know, to keep my job. I'm afraid I'm going to lose my job if I'm not working hard enough. Mm-hmm. Well, at the same time, you're dealing with family issues. Mm-hmm. You're concerned about your family. Maybe someone in your family can't work from home or is still, you know, out and about and you're worried about them.
Yep.
Like, at the end of the day, they come first. You know, I'm not saying neglect your job, but just, you know, prioritize and understand right now that, and hopefully your employer feels the same way, that your health and your family come before the
job.
We're
all in
right
the same
now.
Situation.
Exactly.
There. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, talking to somebody every day, I think that's important. You know, like, and
it
I'll be honest,
pretty basic, doesn't
it does, but there's been a couple times, you know, again, with what I typically do in a regular day, you know, there's a lot of times when I don't need to interact with someone at all. But I still find myself like trying to make a point out of it. If nothing else, getting on Teams and just chatting with someone like, hey, what's going on today? Yep. What have you been up to? Yep. Or something like that.
Keep that connection.
Yeah. And, you know, or maybe doing a quick little phone call or a video conference. You know, this came up, I think, in our, again, back to our very first podcast when we were talking with Cordy, I think, about digital marketing, that none of us used these cameras on our computers before this.
Right.
Like, if I got onto a call that was through WebEx or, you know, some kind of a conferencing tool that
turned it off,
that technically could, I never slid that little thing over to let the camera be open, never got on camera. No one on the call ever did either. Mm-hmm. And I find myself doing that more now. Even like internal people on Teams, you know, like if someone internal contacts me, like, I feel like I just need to flip that open because it's to me, it's the same thing as them coming to my desk and chatting to me. Like, it's not like I'm going to look away from them while they're at my desk, you know, like let's see each other. It's fine, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's an important one, too.
And there's studies behind that, how people are missing the face-to-face, the human interaction. Because at the end of the road, we are human, and right. humans like to interact with one another. So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely a challenge that we've had out there. So I agree with you. You know, pick up the phone, talk to somebody, even if it's just chatting it up, like you were at the water cooler. All yep. good.
Well, let's wrap up with our favorite segment, What's Tech Connecting With You? This is where we talk a little bit about a piece of technology. Could be something we've read about, something we're using, playing with, watching, just something that's really, you know, connecting with us right now. Dean, what is Tech Connecting with you this week?
All right, I'm going to throw a word at you. Biomimicry. Have you ever heard of biomimicry?
Sounds familiar.
So I never put a word behind it, but I'll just read it to you, which literally translates to imitation of the living is the practice of taking inspiration from the natural world and applying it to human challenges in order to create sustainable solutions. So
interesting.
People are using biomimicry in technology. So one of the ways that it manifests itself, for example, a camera lens on your phone. Mm-hmm. You have scientists out there that are looking at the eyes of beetles and dragonflies and owls and some of these animals, if you will, that have, here's the one, bark beetles have 200 separate optical units in their eyes. A beetle wow. that has 200 different, and then applying that into maybe your smartphone.
Right.
That you would have even more optics behind it, improving the depth of field.
Right.
Improving, those types of things. Using longer lasting batteries that use sugar, much like the way that a human converts sugar into energy.
Right, right.
Waterproof coating, looking at animals and how those types of coating and really the structural part of it. And so it's this whole idea of kind of taking what's in nature. Maybe this is coming out of this whole, pandemic thing and, looking around and having the chance to do walks and, hey, I don't know, but biomimicry, I kind of like the whole idea of mimicking the natural world and applying it into technology and what we do on a day-to-day basis.
Nature is a well-oiled machine.
Well-oiled. They got billions of years of
that has existed long before us and will probably exist long after us and functions just fine without some of the marvels that we, as humans think that we're only capable of. So why shouldn't we? Why shouldn't we look at some of that stuff and say, hey, this is what nature's been doing for all this time and getting it right. Can we just do that too? Yeah. Like, you know.
I'm going to throw another one at you. Hey, do you know what a tardigrade is?
Yes.
Oh, you do? Of course you do.
And part, well, two reasons. One, because they're just fascinating little creatures. And the other, because one of the newer Star Trek shows, Star Trek Discovery, a lot of their first season is focused around tardigrades.
Really?
For reasons I won't get into because it would take way too long.
Okay, but we have to offline about that because I just found out about this little creature and Marco's looking at us like we're crazy right now. But this
water bears, that's their water bears.
Yep. Yeah, and they're only like a millimeter.
Yeah.
They're the smallest.
They're almost microscopic. Yeah.
Almost microscopic, but they're unbelievable. They're known as the toughest creatures on the planet because they can go literally a decade without food or water.
Right.
A decade without food or water. They can withstand temperatures of close to zero. No, I'm talking absolute zero, not zero degrees Fahrenheit. I'm talking negative 240 or whatever absolute zero is. Hotter than boiling water. They can survive in that. And they can withstand 1,000 times the lethal dose of radiation that humans can. So it's like this little microscopic thing that can basically... throw it out.
Outlive all of us.
They'll outlive
everything. Even the cockroaches. They'll even outlive the cockroaches.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. So, it's just fascinating that, that's out there in nature, and maybe we could learn something from tardigrades.
That's right. There you go. Anyway, awesome.
Yeah. What's that connecting with you?
So for me, it's an interesting podcast. I'm always recommending different podcasts because I listen to way too many. There's one that I just finally finished listening to. Actually, it started a while back. And it's funny because I think the pod was mostly recorded and released in 2019.
Okay.
But the topic is become ridiculously relevant. It's called The End of the World.
Okay.
And it is a 9-part podcast from Josh Clark, who's one of the co-hosts of Stuff You Should Know, if you've ever heard of that. It's just a podcast all about just deep dives into any random subject you can think of to just tell you more of what you should know about it.
Right.
So he did a separate podcast where he talks all about the various existential threats that could end life as we know
it. So we're talking comets
to nuclear war,
pandemics,
AI going wild. And obviously, there was an episode about pandemics, whether man-made or just, biological pandemics that come about. very super relevant, very scary type stuff. It is one of those podcasts you don't listen to if you know, broad, giant concepts of how the world could potentially end that you could have nothing to do with or no control over whatsoever frightened you, because it dives into a lot of that stuff.
Okay.
And there was a couple points that I thought were very interesting. One was the idea, two ideas. One was the idea that the Fermi principle, basically,
okay.
Or the Fermi conundrum or whatever, I think, I can't remember the name of it. But the scientist Fermi, who came up with this idea once, and I believe he might have worked on or around the Manhattan Project.
Okay.
But he came up with this idea talking about life from outer space, because one of the potential, you know, end of the world scenarios was, what if an alien race comes and decides to wipe us out, you know, existence.
Yeah.
So Fermi came up with this concept of, well, we've been in existence for a while now, and we've not yet really heard from aliens. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, we think we have, maybe potentially from time to time, but like legitimately, no aliens have come and just started talking to us.
Right.
So his theory was, well, that means either two things. One, we are literally alone in the universe, or that other civilizations hit a point where they simply can't cross a certain threshold and get out there and meet other civilizations.
Mm.
And that might be our future as well.
I see.
Because presumably his theory would be that all other civilizations at some point would get to where we are, where we're starting to think about, hey, we could go out and explore the stars. We've got the ability to do that. We're going to get there. And then for one reason or another, they can't cross that line, or they end up getting wiped out of existence themselves for some reason and never make it that far.
Mm-hmm.
Both of which are kind of depressing, but it's kind of like, he's like, well, this is the only way to look at it if we haven't heard about aliens or contacted them so far, you know, in this giant wide universe. The other interesting quick little point is they were talking about, like, hey, we as humanity have already faced an existential threat in a way, in the sense that we created nuclear energy and nuclear bombs.
Mm-hmm.
So when referencing the Manhattan Project and talking about some of the early tests that, you know, took place, some of the scientists at those beginning tests brought up the discussion, like, we aren't sure that setting off a nuclear bomb isn't going to ignite everything in our atmosphere and burn the whole planet in no time.
Yeah, that was a real threat.
A legitimate threat. They spent time researching this. They spent time thinking about it. At some point, someone said, like, it was like a 0.3% chance or something. Maybe even as high as actual 3%. Someone decided there was a percentage chance. They said, well, this is the threshold that if you can tell me that we are at or under this threshold for burning up the earth and destroying all life as we know it by setting off this nuclear weapon.
Unbelievable.
Then that's the point where we won't do it. And they decided, like, no, we didn't cross that threshold. Yeah, so they went ahead and did it.
Yeah.
Never mind, they didn't bother asking the rest of us if we were okay with it. You know, just a bunch of scientists and military people just sat around going, yeah, we're pretty sure that's not going to happen, so we'll go ahead and do it.
Man.
But the point was that, like, that was a very much an existential threat to humanity that we did kind of get through and, you know, thought our way through it to some extent, made sure it didn't really happen. So maybe that's some hope for the future that we can potentially prevent ourselves from stumbling into our own life extinction events in the future.
Man, there's some holes we could go down.
There's so much rabbit holes. Like I said, it's the kind of podcast you listen to and you're like, like, this made me think and I don't know if I like it. You know? So end of the world with Josh Clark. That does it for us, Dean. Yep. As always, I want to thank you for a great conversation.
Absolutely.
We promise we are going to have some more guests on soon. Dean and I just like to ramble on about
stuff.
There
you go. So, yeah.
But for Dean Reverman, I'm John Martin. It is time for us to unplug. Until next time, stay connected. The Tech Connect podcast is brought to you by Elo. Trying to help your customers open or reopen safely with social distancing and infection control protocols, Elo offers touchscreen solutions to help with employee access, guest check-in, self-service, and much more. Their modular platforms increase safety, eliminate paper-based processes, and reduce the cost of visitor management. Elo also provides thorough cleaning and disinfecting guidelines. To learn more, visit Elo's microsite on bluestarinc.com or contact your Elo representative.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to tax healthcare resources, Zebra is ready to help with a wristband solution aimed at hospitals and temporary facilities in need of quick triage, identification, and isolation of positive patients. Their medical-grade thermal wristband printers are designed for easy setup, prolonged performance, and speedy print, combined with durable bands and options like color coding to easily identify where patients belong. To learn more, visit BlueStarInc.com's COVID-19 solutions page or contact your Blue Star representative.